Mrs. Margaret Bootland, Reel 1. And if I could ask you first of all, Mrs. Bootland, to tell me something about your life, you know, whereabouts you were born and brought up and the sort of family life you had.
I've got it all written down.
Well, you tell me on here if you can.
Yes, I will. I was born in Pontypridd Barracks. I was the first child of Herbert and Ruth Norgate. He was a colour sergeant and a cook sergeant. And I was the eldest of five children. We had a very happy childhood. We were in army quarters, and my bedroom, I used to open the window a little bit, was right outside the green where the soldiers were assembling rifles. And I used to hear the click and when they were done, and hear the sergeant shouting at them when they were stupid, and so on. And then I used to go sometimes and peep, but there were some huge railings to stop the barrack children running onto the square. There was a road that went up to the officers' mess, and then the huge square was there where they used to march up and down, and one thing and another. Well, when war broke out, 1914, my mother was heavily pregnant, and she couldn't travel. The rest of the families, they were taken away, but Mum and one or two others were allowed to stay until their babies were born. And when she was fit to travel, my aunt got us a house next to hers in a little village called Wentworth, the Earl Fitzwilliam's estate. And with many happy years there, my brother was born. My father never left England. With being a cook sergeant, he was based up in the northeast somewhere, and occasionally Mum could go out for a holiday. It was at the seaside. It was a big training area, and I don't remember that at all. But what I do remember is it was a very cold night, and my uncle next door, he and my aunt, they were wonderful people. He suddenly threw the bed clothes off me, and he says, "Come on," he said, "your mother's waiting for you in the field." And of course, I was dopey and half asleep, and I said, "Please, Uncle, let me go back to bed." "No," he says, "you've got to come with us, because it's not safe." And I didn't understand that at all. And he wrapped a blanket, put my shoes and stockings on, wrapped a blanket round me, and I must have been about five, and carried me, and then handed me over a little wall into the field where the village was congregated. The next thing is, the cold made me want to spend a penny. And I said, "Mum, I want to read these." She said, well, actually, I didn't know John was due to be born. My brother, is this all right? And my aunt took me to the hedge, and I remember this clearly. And we'd only just got back to our little family group when this Zeppelin appeared, and it was dropping bombs on Sheffield, and we could feel the impact and the thud of every bomb that went down. Of course, one or two screamed and panicked. But they were after the steelworks, the Germans, but they missed, and they hit a housing estate instead. Caused a lot of deaths. But that was the first recollection of my life. Then after the war was over, we went back to the barracks. Eventually, my sister Joan was born. She she was 8 years younger.
And that would have been in Pontefract, would it again?
Pontefract Barracks, yes, Pontefract Barracks. And we'd gone back to a very nice quarter. And we were happy. We went to the army school. We had two teachers. I think he was a commission rank, and his wife was a teacher too. But eventually, the children dwindled so much, they couldn't justify the cost of the teachers being there. So they were posted to another area, and we had to go to the local school, which I'd be about 9 then. But quite happy that I always remember the barracks with affection. And
yes, what sort of accommodation would army wives have had then in the barracks?
Very good. Tall. We were supplied with army furniture. They were furnished. And if you wanted to put your rugs and carpets down, if you could afford them then. But I had a very happy childhood. And then my youngest sister was born. Come back, I was nearly 15. Ellen and I had come back, and Joan had been to the Browns, Ellen and I had been to the Guides. We came back, and to our amazement, Joan and John were in bed, and my father said, I want you to get undressed, go and wash and clean your teeth, and I'll bring you some supper. No. Bring some stuff, and then you must clean your teeth. And then go in and say goodnight to your mother. Stuff like that, yes. When we did go in to see her, I didn't know that, and my aunt was sat there, that my younger sister was due to be born. I was very innocent in those days, didn't know a damn thing. And so we said goodnight. Next morning we had a baby sister. But I knew something was wrong, because my dad didn't look too pleased. My mum had been weeping. And so I said, Mum, what's wrong? Oh, nothing. No. But I soon found out, because I was 14. I could run a house, I could do everything. And then she said, well, I'm sorry, but the baby isn't healthy. She isn't well. And she said, we think she's blind. So I was devastated. But it eventually proved that she was not blind, that she was a Down syndrome. And that affected us. It's affected all of us, really, because Evelyn was such a happy child. And people were very kind to her, because those children are very loving. You can't trust them to behave themselves and do what they're told. But you get a lot of love from them.
What was the sort of public reaction in those days to a Down syndrome?
A lot of people. I remember taking Pat off. She and her friend were going with Evelyn now to see one of these films one afternoon in Wakefield, where we eventually live in. And these girls kept looking. And so Pat said, I was cross with her. She said, don't you think you've studied her enough? We're not looking. Oh, yes, you are, she said. And Evelyn knew it. She used to get very uncomfortable and agitated when people looking at her. But that's that. But she did live to be almost 60. She was in a few weeks, and they said that was wonderful. It's one of the, they usually die at 40. But with her having two loving homes, Joan's and mine, she carried on. And everyone loved her. And I think it's done us all good, the children, because Dimitri, my grandson, Pat's son, he's just passed his final exam. He's now, what do you call it now? Fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons. He's in the RAF. Am I going beyond the bounds? Well, I can. He's in the Air Force and doing very well indeed. And he went up last week and got his final exam. Fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons. Elizabeth, whom you met yesterday, she's a doctor.
Well, your family have done well, but I better get back,
yes,
you know, to this time.
Of course.
You know, it's very, you're so interesting, I think, Mrs. Bootland, because you've lived the service life right the way through, Margaret.
Yes,
yes, I will.
And my son, joined the army. He left the grammar school at Wakefield to go into the army,
yes,
as a boy apprentice.
Right, well, perhaps later on we could catch up with your son.
He comes into the
story. Yes. So we'll go back to your 14-year-old, you know, when you were a young girl. Had you left school by that time?
I left at 14.
Yes, so what did you do when you left school?
Well, for a year, my father made me stay at home and help Mum. Mrs. Yarmouth has plenty to do. And if she needs to go shopping, she needs someone with Evelyn. So for until I was 15, and then one day I had to take something back to the big shopping contract to be exchanged. And it was a friend of Mum's, and she introduced me to the boss. And I went home, could I have this job in Norfolk? And I had it. And I stayed there till I was 18. And then I went to Sheffield Children's Hospital train as a nurse, and I signed a 3-year contract, and everything was plain sailing, and I was very happy, and many good friends. And then my father died suddenly, so of course that was it. And with my mother being a trained nurse, she could go out and earn money while I housed him. But it wasn't long before I met my husband. And we were soon married.
And was your husband a serviceman?
Oh, yes. King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry. And he was a sergeant, and he'd just come home from India on a 2-year gunnery course. And I saw this red-haired man sitting by the fire on the fender thing. And I suppose it was love at first sight. We, a close friend of ours introduced us, and within 6 months we were married, because you didn't have to wait for quarters. If you were eligible, you got one, nothing to wait for. And we knew he was going back to India, and I dying to go. My father had been there. He'd been in the Delhi Durbar, he'd been in relief of Ladysmith, and all these tales he used to talk about made me want to go abroad. But we didn't go up first because he was offered a job at Sandhurst. And he went to the, he had to go to Caterham, to the guards' place, to learn the guards' foot drill. And then in the January, and I always remember as we were going down the train to in the train to Camberley, the newsboys were running up and down the platform shouting, "The King's life is drawing to a close." And that was King George the Fifth. And I believe he died during the night. But our 2.5 years at Sandhurst were very happy, very good indeed.
Yes, could you tell me about what it was like to live on an army station then? This would have been just before World War II, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yes, what sort of accommodation did they give you?
Oh, very good indeed. I've always said that the army has looked after us very well indeed, especially the way they provided and guarded us coming out of Burma. Yes, I give full marks to the army for looking after the families.
What was it like, though, living on an army base? I suppose you were used to it, given your background.
I was, yes, and I think I mixed very well. But there were three friends, Molly Birch and Charlotte Goldthorpe,